You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
Spring Black Friday savings are happening now at the Home Depot and also at your front door. Get spring savings delivered to you with free delivery on over 2 million items. Everything you need for spring cleaning, patio decorating, and front yard gardening sent right to you. And if you need it fast, get same-day delivery on thousands of products like fertilizer and seeds to keep your yard looking beautiful. Spring your way with Spring Black Friday savings only at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show.
I think if you didn't do well in high school or whatever, you probably do better in later life, to be honest.
Yeah, because, well, first off, I 100% agree. I wish I hadn't gotten to high school or college. I think I had the option to graduate high school early because I was taking a lot of summer classes at places. Like, I would go to Duke University in the summers and take college courses. So I had credits. They wanted me to graduate a year early, but, you know, I was just stupid. I didn't do it. There's so many things I didn't do because I liked a girl who didn't like me. So I would stay in high school just because the girl I liked was a year younger. I was in 11th grade. She was in 10th grade. And so I would just stay. Instead of graduating 11th grade, I stayed through to 12th grade, which was a waste of time for me. And then another time, I got an offer this is many years later. This was 1991. I was in the process of getting thrown out of graduate school, and I got an offer to work at IBM to work on the chess computer Deep Blue, which ended up beating Garry Kasparov, who was the first computer to beat Garry, a world chess champion. So people thought AI was happening, and it was a whole big thing. And so I had some ideas for the Deep Blue guys, like just like I do now. I shared my ideas, and one of my ideas was, and this is only interesting if you follow these things, but one of my ideas was, typically a chess program looks at it analyzes your moves and then the opponent's moves, then your responses to those moves, and it builds a big tree. It looks at trillions of positions or billions of positions, and then finds the best move. And so I had an idea. What if you skip a move every now and then? If you skip a move and then one side automatically is winning, that means that's a critical line. That's a critical move to look at. And I won't, you just think about it. I won't explain all things. But the point is, that would have been a very exciting job to take. And here I was, right. I was getting thrown out of graduate school anyway. I had nothing to do in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And I was getting thrown out of graduate school. But I remember I liked this girl, Amy Friedman. We were dating and it was clear that she wanted to break up with me. And so I felt like if I left for, you know, IBM, which was in, I guess, Armonk, New York, this relationship would have no chance. And of course, I only knew her a few weeks, but I wanted to marry her and have kids and everything. And so I turned down the job, stayed with Amy, who did break up with me a month later. And then for the next, 3 years I stayed in Pittsburgh until finally I took a job at HBO. But all of this is to say, what I was saying to you earlier was, in high school, there was 360 people in my class. Nobody from my high school typically went to good colleges. They would go to like local colleges or community colleges or whatever. I wasn't in one of those high schools like, oh, but we're in the top five public schools in the country. We weren't even in the top five public schools in our town. it was just a shitty school. No offense to anybody who's from the school listening to it. I had great friends there. But actually, I had no friends there. I take that back. But they're my friends now, but they weren't my friends then. So I was dead set in the middle of the rankings because I never even attended class. Every month they would threaten to expel me because I would just skip school all the time. And I wouldn't even tell my parents. Sometimes my parents were like, why did the school call us today? And I'm like, I don't know. But even if I was number one in my class, I wouldn't have gotten into any good schools because there's like, I don't know, there's like thousands of decent public schools in New Jersey, in New York, Pennsylvania, Connecticut, and the number one, number two, and number three students in each class is applying to all the good schools. Why would they pick any of them, let alone me, who was ranked number 123? And I didn't do a lot of after school activities. Like, there was like some, the charity club, who cares? I didn't do that. And or there was like the mathletes. Like, I was supposed to be good at math. I went to one mathletes competition and I came in like last in the state. And so, but this is why I always say it's better to be the only than to be better. So even if I was a better student, like, you know, the number two student in this whole school, I wouldn't have gotten in any different, you know, but right. I ended up going to a good college, a very good college, an Ivy League school. And I'm not bragging about that, because one thing people should know about Ivy League schools is that unless it's Harvard, okay, I'm giving Harvard a pass. Unless it's Harvard, which it wasn't in my case, the students are no better than anywhere else. There are smarter students in the average community college than at Cornell or where I went. And I won't speak for the other schools. I'll just trash Cornell. I have no problem with that. By the way, can I tell you a story that's a segue?
Right. Yeah.
So one time, the Cornell Alumni Club in New York City asked me to give a talk about education. And it was me, and it was the head of New York State Department of Education. It was like the Secretary of Education for New York. It was like there were professors from Cornell who were speaking, including the chairman of the Computer Science Department, where I had my major. And so I went up there and I said, I learned nothing at Cornell. I learned in fact, when I took a job after Cornell, I was so bad at computer programming, where I had spent my whole time at Cornell programming computers and then graduate school programming computers. And I was so bad at programming, when I had my first real job at HBO, they had to send me to remedial programming classes for 2 months. I had to go to like this AT&T facility and learn how to do basic programming, because you don't learn real life skills in college. Right. And all these things, high school and college, people say, oh, you learn a style of thinking. No, you don't. You just have to memorize. You have to memorize formulas, yeah, or you have to memorize. Like, I always say, I ask two questions to people. Tell me when Charlemagne, the greatest king in Europe, he unified all of Europe, the first king to unify Europe. Tell me when he was born. Almost nobody gets it right within 500 years. I asked this to Alexis Ohanian, who was the founder of Reddit. Now he's married to Serena Williams. I was on his podcast a while ago, and he told me, we were just chatting, he told me he majored in European history. And I'm like, okay, tell me when Charlemagne was born. And he said, 1200 something. No, it was 754 AD. You majored in European studies. What? And I'm not saying he's not smart. I'm saying if you learn through memorization, which is the technique of not only America, but it comes from, this learning technique comes from the England for a reason, which I can explain, but it doesn't work. Another question that's great to ask is, who was the president before Abraham Lincoln? Arguably one of the most important presidents ever, because his actions led directly to the Civil War, and no one could remember.
I think that's unfair, though. What if I didn't grow up in the States? I wouldn't know anyway.
I would give you a pass, because I don't know who the president of Malaysia is. But like, here's the thing about Charlemagne and about the president who started the Civil War is that every schoolboy learns it starting from fourth grade. You learn it every year, by the way. You don't learn it just once. Fourth grade, right. Fifth grade, sixth grade, all the way through 12th grade. And then if you major in European history or US history or government or economics, you're going to certainly learn it in college every single year. And right. No one could ever tell. James Buchanan, by the way, also probably the first gay president, was the president right before Abraham Lincoln, and famously said to Abraham Lincoln on Inauguration Day, if you enjoy coming in here as much as I enjoy leaving here, then you will have a good life. So, because he hated being president, and no, for good reason, he caused a civil war. So, but my point is, using like techniques, like, and I'm not trying to market my book here, but using techniques and skip the line, these are how you really learn skills, like the plus minus equal technique, the micro skills technique, the 10,000 experiment rule. And I've talked about that in other podcasts, but the point is, again, how did I get into a good college or a good graduate school, or then get a job at HBO, or then raise money for a hedge fund when I had no experience, or sell a business when it was barely a business, or so many other things in my life. I am really grateful to the thing that made me the only instead of just better. Now, I tried many things. So when I was younger, this is going to sound odd to people, but I was a really good, this was the mid-80s, I was a really good breakdancer when I was a little kid. Like, I was obsessed with it. Yeah, you didn't know that? I was obsessed with breakdancing. Yeah. I would do it, I would practice for hours a day. I would go to these non-alcoholic clubs where other kids like me, we would battle in breakdancing. And I won't even tell you my, you know, everybody has a pseudonym in those.
You have to tell me. What is it called? Is it Dr. Professor or whatever?
No. It was the Vanilla Popper. Because everyone else was black and I was white. And so, and the guy I would kind of work with, he was black, I was white. So, and then I would wear like all black, he would wear all white. And then we would battle these other crews. And, but anyway, my parents and grandparents were like, this is not going to get you, help you at all getting into college. Like they thought it was, they were probably racist. I don't know. And they thought it would not help me into get into college. So one time, I vaguely knew the rules of chess. I was almost 17 years old. I barely knew how to play chess, and they needed the chess team needed someone to play. And it's weird how you remember things as a kid, but I cannot remember what I had for breakfast this morning. But like, right. I remember they asked me, hey, we need someone on the fifth board, meaning the bottom board, to play against the team from Mattawan, this other town in New Jersey. And I remember going there with the team, and I didn't know any chess, so they gave me a book to read. It was The Stonewall Variation by Fred Reinfeld. I remember the book, and I remember the game that I played, and I won almost instantly. And then I like, oh, and they liked me. The other members of the team liked me because of this. And I think we do things because we want to be liked, or maybe I didn't love myself enough. And so I said, oh, this is a way to be loved. And it also felt good to win. So I asked my dad to show me. He was a good player in the 60s. I asked my dad to show me how to play some more, you know, games. And I bought some more books. And I gradually got obsessed. Within a year, when I was 18, I won the New Jersey Junior Championship. I was the best player in New Jersey under 21. And I won the New Jersey High School Championship. And I was playing in the U.S. Junior Championship and the U.S. National High School Championship, which was the high school champions of each state. And I remember when I went for my interview at Cornell, you know, they have an alumni interview you. I walk into his house and on the board was a chess position. And I'm like, oh, what are you doing? And he said, oh, I'm a chess player. I play in tournaments and I am studying this game. And I said, it looks like Mark Taimanov versus Bobby Fischer, 1971. And he said, that's right. How do you know? And I told him I was chess master and I helped him analyze the game. He was much lower ranked than me. And So I got into college, no problem. Then graduate school, I loved computer science. I was obsessed. And I was already writing my first published paper when I was still in college. Usually people don't do that till they're working on their PhD. And so I loved it so much, but every graduate school rejected me because my grades were not good. I was never a good student. I would never go to class, and I would show up for tests a day late. I was just failing all my classes. And but I was obsessed with the research side, with actually doing things in computer science. But every graduate school rejected me. And then I applied to Carnegie Mellon, which at the time was number one. It was probably better than Stanford and MIT. Now it's probably number three or equal to Stanford and MIT. I applied there. Magically, I got in. I didn't know why I got in. And then when I went there, my office mate was the guy who made the Deep Blue computer. At the time, it was called Chip Test. It was just in the hardware form. And the guy who was the student who was working on it, who was a ranked chess master or had already gotten his PhD and left for IBM. So they needed another chess player there. So my job as a student was just to play Deep Thought all day long. And then whenever I beat it, they would kind of take it apart and figure out what went wrong, because it's got obviously wrong if it lost to a loser like me. And, you know, and that ended up being the computer that, again, beat Kasparov. So again, it was being the only, I was the only chess master at the Carnegie Mellon grad school had a 3% acceptance rate then. And somehow I got in, a mediocre student that got rejected everywhere else. I mean, I got rejected at the safety schools of my safety schools, and yet the best school accepted me because of chess. Right. Then I go to HBO and I'm applying for a job. Every interview I failed. Like, they would ask me, like, okay, do you know how to program a Mac? No. Do you know, like, how to program network communication on Unix computer? No. Do you know how to, you know, object oriented? No. I just didn't know anything. Do you know anything about account? No. Do you know Oracle? No. I didn't know anything. And so I left. I remember there was payphones back then. I called my girlfriend in Pittsburgh and I said, well, looks like I'm not going to get a job here. I failed every interview. And then in Bryant Park, right next to HBO, I saw this guy who I'd played chess with years earlier in a tournament, and Elon Schwartz, who's actually been on this podcast. He's a poker champion now. And this was in 1994. So I've known Elon for, God, all my adult life. And Elon and I played, and I beat him. He's a much stronger player than me, actually. He's a very strong master, but I beat him that game. And I look up, and the guy who would have been my boss's boss's boss was staring, looking at the table. Turned out he was very interested in chess. He was a ranked chess player, but of course lower ranked than me. And he said to me, I never saw anyone beat that guy before. And so we took a walk around Bryant Park talking about chess the whole time. And a few weeks later, he called me, not the person who would be my boss or boss's boss, but this guy Robert called me and offered me the job. And then it turns out when I got there, his group that worked for him, he had about 100 people that worked for him, in the afternoons after work ended, had a big competition with another group, and it was an ego competition. Robert's group had chess players, the other group had chess players, but I was by far the best. So he wanted to basically, just for ego, get me on, hire me so I could crush the other guy's group at chess. So that was getting into HBO. And then when I sold my first business, one of the acquirers was interested in chess, but not as strong as me. They were very impressed. Several times I've been acquired because everybody thinks chess equates with intelligence. In some ways it does, in some ways it doesn't. There is a discipline though to studying chess, and there is some things related to intelligence, but a lot of people like Bobby Fischer, perhaps the greatest chess player ever, is kind of a maniac in every other area of life. So, I mean, he's dead now, but he was a maniac. And then when I was raising money for a hedge fund, as soon as they heard I was a chess master, people would invest. I wouldn't even say chess was related to money management or intelligence. They would just know this fact about me. They would come up in conversation. They'd give me money. And again, even when I'm introduced for talks, I don't tell people to say this, but they always introduce me by saying I'm a chess master, and on and on and on. It's helped me in so many areas of life. And so the purpose of this is not to say how great I am. It's actually to say how mediocre I am. And this artificial thing kind of helped me in terms when people had to make a decision between, it's hard to tell who is smarter than another person. It's hard to say this person, because he has a better SAT score. Let's say someone has a 1400 on the SATs and another person has a 1300. But maybe the other person has good clubs, after school clubs. They were in the key club, or they play basketball or whatever. I didn't have any sports. By the way, I didn't even play again for my high school chess team because I was so much, this is going to sound egotistical, but I was so much better. It wasn't really fun for me to play in the chess team. So I had no after school activities other than that I was New Jersey's junior chess champion. And there was no reason that would make me a better performer at Cornell. In fact, I almost failed out of Cornell. That's a whole other story. And at HBO, you know, I did good, but I wouldn't say above and beyond. And then my business was good, but not above and beyond, but it was still acquired. And when my hedge fund was kind of a mediocre hedge fund, I actually stopped doing the hedge fund business because Bernie Madoff wouldn't invest money with me. And, you know, I figured, well, if he doesn't invest money with me, I'm just never going to raise money. And nobody knew he was a scam at the time, but that's a whole other story. And then just time after time, it's really helped me in life. And so I'm not saying go play chess. I'm saying focus on being the only rather than the better. Yes, it's totally true. Airbnb has changed my life. If anything, they have made my life so much better. Like, I used to live in Airbnbs. I lived in over 100 or 200 different Airbnbs over a three-year period, and I loved it. I became a really good guest of Airbnbs, and I got to know lots of hosts. So when I initially owned a house, I, of course, the first thing I thought was, I'm going to turn my house into an Airbnb because I travel a lot. So why leave my house unused when I can make a side income by letting others Airbnb my house or come to stay in my house as guests? And having my own Airbnb or being a host for Airbnb has allowed me to do just that. And I've met other hosts. I've actually spoken at Airbnb's host conference. I think it was in 2017. I met so many just nice hosts. It's a great community. And I love, you know, turning my own home into an Airbnb. Like, I'm traveling to Austin next month. My home's going to be an Airbnb while I'm away, and I'll stay in an Airbnb. I'd rather stay in like a three-story house Airbnb than in one tiny hotel room in the middle of Austin during South by Southwest. So listen, while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. Many people host on Airbnb, but there are people who are just letting their house sit empty, who've never thought about it or didn't realize their space could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra money. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, then you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. I remember last year I was asked to go speak at the Norway Business Summit, and I was so excited because side by side with the Business Summit was the Norway Chess Summit, where I would get to see in person Magnus Carlsen, the best chess player ever, playing chess. But it was 4 plane rides, like, to get to the city that ultimately I would go to. So I really did not want to fly for 14 hours. And they were willing to pay for everything for me. So I at first class. So I didn't want to fly for 14 hours and not be first class. So I had to hurry up and get on the phone immediately to get those first class tickets to a chess tournament in Norway. And listen, this is just like when, you know, you have to know when you want the best of anything, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. And I did not want those seats to fill up. So it's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. I just was talking to a friend this morning where he was trying to decide between some programmers and he waited a little too long and both the programmers he was interviewing took other jobs, like great jobs. So, you know, what's the best way then to hire the best as quickly as possible? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/James. Just try it and see. You'll find out. So ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify the top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I know this because one time I signed up as an employee, potential employee on ZipRecruiter, and I got nonstop. Really, I was, even though obviously I wasn't looking for a job, I love what I do, but I just wanted to see what would happen because they were a sponsor of my podcast. And the most interesting jobs would pop up in my emails like, hey, you're qualified for this or that. And so it's interesting to see. So just go there and try it. Try ZipRecruiter.com/James. Amp up your hiring performance. Now, this is more for if you're hiring, but amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/James. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/James. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
We'll be right back.
Bring on spring projects with Spring Black Friday Savings from The Home Depot. With free delivery on over 2 million items, you can bring on the spring cleaning, the patio decorating, and the front yard gardening. And if you need it fast, get same-day delivery on thousands of products like fertilizer and seeds to keep your yard looking beautiful. Bring on the spring doing and spring your way only at The Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
So one of my daughters, I'm totally against my daughters and son. My son's already graduated, but I'm totally against my daughters going to college, and they know that. One time when my daughter Josie was 13, I said, look, you're not going to college. And she just turned around and walked away from me. And I'm like, you can't walk away from me. I'm your father. And she just kept walking. Like, she just wouldn't hear that because it was so much against the philosophy that society teaches you. But nevertheless, I want them to not hate me, because when they really need me in life, when they're 27, 28, 30, I want to show them that I'm there for them. So if they choose to go to college, I'm supportive of it, even though I tell them I'm against it, and I tell them all the reasons, and I give them my book, The 50 Alternatives to College. And anyway, the point is, my daughter, one of my daughters, didn't really get in to a lot of colleges, the colleges she wanted when she applied a year ago. And she felt really bad about it. It's really, and again, it's random. Like, these colleges now have a 5% acceptance rate, like, across the board. It's ridiculous what's going on. There's such a demand for a college that's irrational. It's like a bubble. And so she was disappointed. She really should have gotten in everywhere, but just the luck of the dice. She was a great student, like a 4.0 student, which is all A's. She would play for the basketball team. She did charity. She's a great human being. Like, really, she works hard at jobs. And so I said, why don't you take a gap year? And instead of just making a better essay, let's let you try out being the only at something. And it has to be something you love. So we tried different things that she loved. And what she really loved was, oddly, race car driving. And so she took race car lessons. She participated in races. She got her race car driving license. She can now professionally race if she wants. Boom, she got in everywhere and is going to Duke next year, which is a very good school. I actually spent my summers there in 7th, 8th, and 9th grade taking college classes. So she became the only. She's the only one applying who is literally a professional race car driver. So I bet if she applied to Harvard, she would have gotten in. It's important to take your interest. And by the way, we did a podcast recently with John Lee Dumas. He has a good exercise for how to find out what your passions are. In my book, Skip the Line, I also describe some techniques that are different from John's. Both are good. At any point in life, doesn't mean you don't have to be 18. You could be 70. You could be 60. You could be 27 and trying to figure out what you want to do in life. You know, use one of these techniques, and I describe them in other podcasts. Find your passions. Find your interests. Find unusual ways to explore those interests. Like, if you're 40 years old and interested in sports, you're not going to be a professional athlete. But listen to our podcast with Joe Pompliano, the author of Huddle Up, how he used his interest in sports to change careers completely from a really good job on Wall Street to an even better job doing what he loves. Or Matt Berry, he was in his 30s. He was a successful Hollywood screenwriter, but he loves sports. He's not going to be a professional athlete, but he used what I call a spoken wheel technique. I describe his story in my book, Skip the Line. He now has a career in sports, and you can listen to that podcast as well with Matt Berry. But there are many ways to be the only. And people are fascinated by things. They're fascinated by chess. They're fascinated by being a sports competitor, like a ranked sports competitor. They're fascinated by stand-up comedy or race car driving. So find out where your interests intersect with what people are fascinated by. And, you know, maybe write and self-publish a novel when you're 15 years old or 18 years old. I guarantee you that will help you get into any college you want. Or, I don't know, work at the White House for a year. Now, I don't know how you can do that, but in my book, Skip the Line, I have a chapter, Take Two Steps Backwards to Move Three Steps Forward, which helped a young man named Joey Coleman to work at the White House, the CIA, and the FBI by kind of taking lower, almost menial jobs for himself, but using those to catapult into the next job. And there's many, many things, but always focus on this one philosophy. It's better to be the only than the better. And I've spoken about this before on the podcast, but this is regards specifically careers or being accepted to things like colleges or I don't know, even with comedy, I was the only one who was older, but I was the only one who had very rich experience in other areas of life, because all these comedians started at the age of 20 or even younger. So I started at a later age, which meant I knew a lot about a lot of things, and I was had a different style. And plus, I had a lot of social media followers as a result. So I had a different style of comedy than the other comedians. And now everyone told me I couldn't skip the line. Now, because I was not only perhaps better or maybe not, but I was the only. And so people would drive across the, you know, tons of miles to see me if I was in their country or state or whatever. And, you know, I think that's all I have to say about it, but I'm just amazed all the time how much, I can't even remember a single thing I learned in college or high school. Like, I've taken 5 years of French, 4 years of high school French, and 1 year of college French. And by the way, anyone who studies French is a loser. Because what do you use French for? Why didn't I at least study Spanish, which half the world speaks, or Chinese, which is the biggest country in the world?
Didn't French is like the most romantic language out there?
Well, that's why.
You know, like, you know, it's like, you know,
my sister spoke French and I loved her and wanted to speak French. And but it was like stupid. Like, I was telling this to Robin yesterday and she's like, oh, well, you know, French was like the cool thing to study. And I'm like, trust me, I didn't become cool by like going up to all the jocks and saying, hey man, I'm taking French. I'm the cool guy. Like, that did not help me become cool at all. I never was cool.
And in French fries.
Yeah. And look, by the way, after 5 years of French, I know the word oui, and I know I could say qu'est-ce que c'est, but I don't even know what that means. Does it mean?
What does that mean?
I don't even know. I don't know. And that was like a common French phrase. I don't know anything anymore in French. I probably know more Spanish than French, and I don't know Spanish. I never studied Spanish. But, you know, now I'm living in a town where 60% of the people speak Spanish. They're all from South America, and I don't know Spanish. I should have studied Spanish, but I don't know why I brought that up.
It's okay. You know, like sometimes you have to brag about how much you learn in a language and never know how to use them.
Oh yeah. I think that's a common quote unquote trope. Trope is the new synergy. Like, there's always these words that never existed before that suddenly become popular. Like, yeah. In every podcast, I think you might've noticed the word trope is used by someone, usually me, but
see, like I have recorded, I would say like at least more than 300 episodes of your podcast. Like, every single podcast trope came up, but I have no idea what does that mean.
It's like just a common theme. Like, right. Oh, a common trope of TV shows is the main character is not pretty, but then she has a makeover and now everyone thinks she's pretty.
Yeah, why did you just say theme? Why do you have to say trope? You know?
I don't, because theme is not quite accurate. I don't know what a better word is. A common structure.
Common formula.
Yeah, common formula. That would work. Yeah, common formula. The 100 most common TV formulas. I think, isn't there a website that someone told us, tvtropes.com? I think Chuck Wendig, who wrote for TV shows, told us about tvtropes.com. Tvtropes.org. Yeah. So like, for instance, here, I'm at tvtropes.com and let's see, common tropes. What can I find? Follow TV tropes. Newest trope is living program. In real life, programs are lines of code and data made to execute a function. In fiction, they tend to be something more. The living program itself is completely made of data, but it possesses a physical form which can wander around cyberspace. Oh, so like, for instance...
Oh, right.
Like, well, remember that movie? I think it was called Her.
Right.
With Joaquin Phoenix.
Did she wander around in cyberspace though?
But yeah, like, remember at the end? She was only just in cyberspace, like talking to her all the other living things. And, you know, so that was a common trope.
It's like, I don't know if you watch Justice League. Justice League's cyborgs just walk around in cyberspace. And
I don't know.
And Tron, okay. Is it Tron? Tron? Is it Tron?
Oh, Tron, I never saw that.
Yeah, right. Tron is in living in cyberspace too.
So let me, I'm looking at now the main tropes. So here's, let's look at a trope for action. So the action genre is a kind of trope. So right. The typical scenario of the protagonist is an action. In an action is a plot-specific series of mini-stories in the forms of fights or challenges, usually featuring extended violence with the prevalence of firearms because the protagonists are in direct physical danger. The story in an action typically shades in comparison to the visuals. So let me find a different...
This would be a great 30 days book challenge for anyone out there. You know, like just go to tvtropes.org and find the tropes and just write a novel about it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So here's a trope. I have no idea what this is. It's the rule of cool. So sometimes, you know, like let's say people teleport. That can't happen in real life, but
right.
Somehow, you know, scientific laws are circumvented by this trope. And I don't know what this trope is. Let me see. Viewers will forgive liberties with reality as long as the result is wicked awesome. So for instance, remember the movie Jumper where yep. Hayden yep. Christensen can teleport? Like yep. Clearly they never explain how that can nope. happen or you know what the science is. We have to nope. completely be willing. The viewer can't just say, well, this is stupid. Nope. And they shut off after 5 minutes. They have to like... buy into it. The reason they buy into it is because, man, wouldn't it be cool to do it?
Yeah.
So the rule of cool is a trope which allows you to circumvent the rules of reality.
I think that's why they establish like the first few scenes, like him jumping around, stealing monies, and then enjoying life. Like
yeah, it's like imaginary.
Yeah.
Like okay, so let me see.
All right, one more trope, and we have to go because you have a meeting next.
Yeah, narrative tropes. Okay, here's one. A very big trope is abusive parents. Parents are supposed to be protectors of children, but these parents are either so damaged themselves, they can't do the job, or they're greedy or villainous, blah, blah, blah. And abusive parents are commonplace in fairy tales and classical mythology, which makes this trope older than feudalism, which is another trope. Then sometimes a parent will go as far as to kill the child in question, and this trope is a subtrope called offing the offspring. And in other cases, the parent's abuse occasionally drives the offspring to snap and become a self-made orphan. They kill their parents and become self-made. So a self-made orphan could also be like Oliver Twist, which was a Charles Dickens.
Oh.
You know, or even the abusive parents trope is Harry Potter is a
right.
classic
yeah.
example. So a lot of stories are combinations of these tropes. And these tropes are very old, so we relate to them. Because we've seen these in nonstop movies. Like here's another one, the jerk index. And you can think of all the movies you've seen where the main character has to deal with a jerk. Like what was that movie with Ben Stiller and Cameron Diaz that was very funny? And the jerk was always secretly in love with Cameron Diaz. Ben Stiller was dating her.
And he something about Mary?
Oh, there's something about Mary, yeah. And the jerk would always give Ben Stiller really bad advice to ruin his dates because he liked Cameron Diaz.
Right.
And so that's an example of the jerk trope. And so if you figure out like, you know, which three or four tropes to use, you can get yourself a plot. Like imagine the rule of cool with abusive parents with the jerk trope. And actually, guess what? That's Jumper. He had abusive parents.
Right, yeah, yep.
His mom abandoned him and his dad always yelled at him. And so finally he jumped away. That's how he learned how he's had his power. There was the jerk who would always show up and say, get away. And there was, what was the other trope I said?
The jerk trope, abusive trope, and the awesome trope.
The rule awesome. Of cool. Because it's
cool,
like, yeah. So now suddenly, that literally knowing those three tropes, you could write that story, which was
right.
horribly acted, by the way, because Hayden Christensen quite possibly is the worst famous actor on the planet.
But he's gonna be back for Darth Vader.
Oh my God.
He's
I'm
gonna
so
be back for Darth Vader.
You should almost Obi-Wan. Post. I wish we could post, if you're allowed to do this, I wish we could post a video clip of him explaining to Padme what's going
the
on.
Sand.
That
the
was
sand.
The I was like cringing throughout that entire scene, even when the first time I saw it, and now it's even worse. Like I kind of vomit in my mouth a little bit, like when that scene happens.
Isn't it like life is like a sin or whatever?
Yeah, I don't know.
Anyway,
yeah.
I think
by the way, why does Padme's apartment, which is like a penthouse looking over the city of the capital of Alderaan, why does it have no furniture?
If you think about it, like
there's no kitchen.
None of the Star Wars high-end luxury apartment has no kitchen.
Yeah, no kitchen.
Think about it,
no bathrooms.
No.
Where did the Millennium Falcon have a bathroom? There was no bathroom. Nobody ever said, "I got to stop playing this three-dimensional chess with Wookiee with Chewbacca and go to the bathroom." No one ever says that.
Yeah, the only thing we know that there's in Millennium Falcon is there's a compressor that they need to fix all the time. Every time something breaks down, it's always the compressor.
Yeah. The compressor or the what's that thing Luke yells when the Millennium Falcon is breaking down? It's the modulator. There's some technical thing he's yelling and it's like, what? Okay, they know science. By the way, I don't think Star Wars is a science fiction movie. No. It uses it's 100% the Western trope with that happens to be in space. It's a Western that takes place in space, which by the way is like the Mandalorian.
Mandalorian is the main essence that what George Lucas wanted the Star Wars to be.
Yeah, Mandalorian is totally a Western in space with the Force.
Yep.
So it's like if John Wayne was on another planet and could also move objects with his mind, or at least someone in this show could move objects with their mind, then that would be Star Wars.
Right.
So anyway, this is an advanced version of any discussion I've had about better to be only than the best. And this comes through in a lot of our podcasts, but I would encourage people to listen to my podcast with Brian Keating because you can't just be the best physicist to win the Nobel Prize. There's other aspects. There's Einstein had his special look. There were other people doing just as interesting science, but he had the look of a genius scientist. And, you know, he had this great way of taking his thought experiments and translating them to complicated math so the everyday person could understand and the scientist could understand. And he was the only one able to do that, so he stood out. And so, but anyway, that's for another podcast. But thank you very much, Jay, for playing along and doing a little podcast with me.
Yeah,
and,
yeah,
and for welcome. Everyone out there, this is the way you get into anything you want.
Yep.
That's it.
Be the only one.
Yeah, right? Be the only. Maybe we should call this one, you know, how to get everything you want.
For sure.
That's it.
Yep. Thank you.
Bring on spring projects with Spring Black Friday Savings from The Home Depot. With free delivery on over 2 million items, you can bring on the spring cleaning, the patio decorating, and the front yard gardening. And if you need it fast, get same-day delivery on thousands of products like fertilizer and seeds to keep your yard looking beautiful. Bring on the spring doing and spring your way only at The Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.